Okay, we're starting off in Parshas Baharim B'Sulkosai in Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk Alvei. Daber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. God spoke to Moshe and Har Sinai saying, Daber O Bnei Yisrael Hamata Alem, you should speak to Bnei Yisrael, you should say to them, Kisavo El Aretz, when you come to the land, Asher Ninos in Lechem, that I give to you, V'shav Z'Aretz Shabbos LaHashem. The land will rest a Shabbos for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know this is Shemitah, 6 years you should plant your fields, 6 years you should prune your vineyards, V'asaftas to us, you should gather your grain, V'ashana Shavis Shabbos Shabbos in the seventh year, there will be a rest to the land, Shabbos Hashem, a full Shabbos to God. You should not plant your field, you should not do anything to your vineyard. Okay, so Vayikra is supposed to be Korbanos, right? It's supposed to be Korbanos. It's all supposed to be about the Kohanim or Korbanos, and pretty much it's been following that track, you know, like Vayikra, Tzav, it's all about the different types of Korbanos, and when you bring the Korbanos, Tzav then went into the Mishkan a little bit. Shemini talked about that eighth day of the Mishkan, when Aaron was finally allowed in, then we started going into laws of the Kohanim. Then we got into all the others. I mean, after that, Tazria, Mitzora are all things that the Kohanim do. I mean, that's stuff that the Kohen has to declare whether the guy's a Mitzora or not a Mitzora. Achrimos Kiddushim are special laws that apply to Kohanim. And then it adds on because of that, we went into Arayas that like got sidetracked. But it's very clear what the point of Achrimos Kiddushim is. And then Emor is straight out Emor al-Kohanim b'nei Aaron once again. Bahar b'chukosai sort of like fall off the track. They shouldn't be here. They shouldn't be in Vayikra. You'd think they're off, and then all of a sudden it says, I mean, we talk about number one, Bahar Sinai Lamor, and then it's Dabero b'nei Yisrael Ramat Alem, we start going into Shemitah. What in the world does Shemitah have to do with all the rest of this? Why in the world do we bring up Shemitah, this resting of the land during the seventh year, over anything else in the middle of Parshas Kohanim, seemingly in the middle of Parshas Kohanim? So, and Ribbis, and the different houses that you have to buy, and the amount of the price of people, what is this doing over here? You know where this belongs? David, where would you say this belongs? You gotta put it somewhere. You gotta put it in Parshas Mishpatim. That's where it belongs, right? So the Rush says an unbelievable thing. The original Luchos had Korbanos, but the Korbanos were written in a different way, different form, different everything. Everything was different about the Korbanos. Really, what we should have had is the entire Torah, and then put Korbanos all the way at the end. Should have had all the laws, put all the laws together, and Parshas Mishpatim would have been Parshas Mishpatim, Kiseitze, Re'eh, like all those laws that we have, put them all together in like one huge Parsha, put them all together, then at the very, very end, we would say, oh, by the way, here's Korbanos, and build me a Mishkan. That's what it should have been.
Why does he say that?
Why does Rosh say that?
Why should it be that order?
That's what it should have been that way, because normally all the laws should be put together. Why skip out on those laws? Why not put them all together? That's what the Rosh says. However,
I'm sure there's a much better explanation.
Well, he hasn't explained anything yet. So the problem is that we got sidetracked. That once, as soon as we got up to that point where we were in the middle of Parshas Mishpatim, and we went into, Truma Tetzav are out of order according to the Ramban. We went straight into Kisisa. It started going through the laws of Shabbos and everything. Immediately, Bnei Yisrael got sidetracked. And as Bnei Yisrael were learning the laws of Mishpatim, the Egel happened. Once the Egel happened, then the Mishkan and the Korbanos were brought about to be a kapara, to be an atonement for Bnei Yisrael, to be a full atonement for Bnei Yisrael. So once he got sidetracked, then all of a sudden we just went off topic. And we're like, okay, so what do we do for the Mishkan? And that's where Truma Tetzav of Yaakov Pekudei come in. And then we're like, okay, so what do we bring? And that's Vayikra Tzav. And then who are the people that bring it? Shemini, Tazria, Metzora, Achrimos, Kedoshim, all of those. Those get all put together. And then after we finish all that, then we say, and Parshas Emor is the Kohanim as well. Then after that we say, like, where were we again? Oh, right. Back at Har Sinai. And we go right back to Parshas Mishpatim. It was sort of like just thrown in there. Everything got thrown in there up until now. And now Parshas Bahar, we go back to our original subject, which was what? Bahar Sinai. Da'aber Hashem O Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. We went back to Har Sinai. We said, okay, so what were we doing? Same bad time, same bad channel. We came right back to Har Sinai. What happened at Har Sinai? We start going on to all the same old Mishpatim they were speaking about beforehand. Seems to be a very, very nice little teretz as to what this is doing in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Vayikra. But anyway, the Chassam Sofer asks, what's the bitachon by Shemitah? So we all know you're supposed to have some type of belief in God, some trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be able to give you all the food in the seventh year. Eric, how are we supposed to know that everything's going to be good in that seventh year? How will we know? What does Chazal say?
We don't.
No, but what does Chazal say? The Chazal say that, don't worry, you won't have to worry about anything in Shemitah. Why?
6 years you shall work the land, and the seventh year shall work.
Oh, the sixth year is going to give all 3 years, so you'll be okay. Sheshonim Tizrach Sedecha, Sheshonim Tizrach Kamecha is correct, but Asaftis Tvuasa, we always say, like, oh, that means that you're going to have grain for 3 years. But that's not bitachon. That means that you can just check out your sixth year bumper crop. if you had a bumper crop in the sixth year, then everything's good. And you'll know you'll have to keep Shemitah. But if you didn't have a bumper crop, then you'll know you shouldn't keep Shemitah, because I didn't get enough food. Says Chassam Sofer, and it's a great question. If the whole thing is based on what you're supposed to get in your sixth year, either in the sixth year I'm going to have enough, or in the sixth year I'm not going to have enough, where's the bitachon? Where's the muna? Either I'm going to have that stuff, or I'm not going to have that stuff. I'll see what happens. And if I don't have enough, then forget it, I'm not going to keep Shemitah that year. So what in the world does that belief mean? Don't worry, everything's going to be taken care of because you'll have enough during the sixth year. So Chassam Sofer says an unbelievable vort. This happens, it happens in a couple Gemaras, but we're just going to give an example for now. The Bava Sali, well-known Sfardi Mekubal that used to have Farbringans all the time. It used to be the Bava Sali, you should just know, the Bava Sali was very into sadness and fasting. He fasted quite a bit. Even when he was a kid, when he was 8, 9, 10 years old, he used to fast called Tainis Hafsukos, week to week. He would fast all day, every day, from Shabbos to Shabbos. He would drink at night, but he wouldn't drink during the day, and he wouldn't eat anything. When he was 8, 9, 10 years old, his brother found out about it and went crazy on him. His brother was about 13 years older than Rav David went crazy on him and said, well, what are you doing? You're still a little kid. You have no chiyuv even to start fasting, let alone to fast like what you're doing. Tainis Hafsukos are crazy, but the Bava Sali continued doing it. Then one day he had a dream. And when he had that dream, he saw that he was standing outside of his tent. He didn't see anybody coming, but he felt movement right by him. He felt Avram Avinu walk by him, Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu, then Moshe, Aaron, David. Yosef wasn't there for some reason. And then the seventh one, they called out. By this time, his brother had passed away. Is when he was much older. Rav David Abuchatzera came and lit the seventh candle on a menorah that was standing right in front of him. So Rav David came out, and he was the only one that he could see, that the Bava Sali could see. He couldn't see any of the others. Rav David said to him, you want to be able to see the people that are in front of me? You're going to have to stop your fasting and start learning how to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with simcha. So Bava Sali got up the next morning and he started to make farbringans. He started to make simchas, like a Hasidish Rebbe almost. It wasn't like a normal Mekobal Sephardi thing to do. But he started to do it, and he started to bring over other people and started to make these huge happy feasts. He would make siyumim all the time, and he'd have everybody over. And during that feast, he was well known that he would have wine, and he'd pour wine for everybody. And sometimes, if he would run out of wine, he would take a little thing, go all the way around it, so that nobody could see what was inside the bottle, and he would just pour for everyone in the room. That was a famous thing, that from the same bottle, without that little pipe that was leading to like a huge barrel in the back, you know, he had a little bottle that was going all the way around, pouring for everybody in the room. And it was, well, everybody had heard of this thing before. Rosh Yeshiva, who went to Yeshiva Negev, he went down south to the Yeshiva Negev, he said that he has seen that. There were only two things that he ever saw about the Bava Sali. That was one of the things that everybody knew, that the wine was just being poured after pour after pour. The reason why is because you can make a nace, but the nace is that nobody sees how much is left inside that bottle. You guys might have heard of it. It's a folklore story, but it's a true story. About what?
About the grain. That if you don't count your grain, then Hashem can give you the bracha.
I was going to say
it makes more. Right?
Right, that's a whole demonic gemara about the demons getting hold of it. But Elisha with the oil is the famous one.
The story of Hanukkah you can also do.
Yeah, the story of Hanukkah that always went out. As long as nobody's watching it and making sure that whatever, as long as you're not counting it or mentioning it through.
This is about checking the balance in your bank account.
I mentioned regarding that also, that there were people that were told specifically, don't look at your bank account numbers. Everything will work out in the end. That they were told they were so poor that they shouldn't check their bank account number. But the idea is that somehow everything will be perfectly fine. Somehow everything is perfectly fine. So too, that's what the bitachon is. It's not what happens in the sixth year. Your sixth year is not going to be guaranteed a bumper crop. The chiddush is that don't count the amount of grain that you got from your sixth year. Just let it be inside the storage house. And keep taking out from that storage house without looking at how much is left. And you'll be guaranteed to have enough for the sixth, seventh, and eighth year. But that takes a muna. If you don't have a muna, if you don't have bitachon on a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you'll keep looking in and being like, how much do I have left? I only think I have enough left for a little bit amount. I don't know how I'm going to be able to survive without Shemitah if I don't plant during Shemitah. If you have a Munah Bitachon, you'll just throw it all inside and you'll be perfectly fine. You won't have to worry about anything. And we said, Eretz Yisrael is the perfect place for that. That's why the idea of Shemitah doesn't necessarily exist outside of Eretz Yisrael. The idea of Shemitah Sekhsafim does, but Shemitah of the land only exists in Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael is a place where you can really have Bitachon. That's a place where you can really have Bitachon. It's so hard to have it when you don't feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking down on you. And I told you guys about this before. There's a difference between how an Israeli looks at things and an American looks at things. An American looks at things as, let's save up and then we'll spend the money. An Israeli thinks of it, I'll borrow the money and then I'll pay it back. And you think to yourself, well, that's a stupid idea. You're always going to be in debt. But the way they're thinking is, since they have to pay it back, all the money that they get that's a surprise to them instead of just putting into savings and not thinking about it, all of a sudden, oh, it came to me on the day that I was hired to pay the $500. I got $500 on that day. Then it already seems like HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something for you. But if you just say a random day, I got $500, you don't think of it as HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me something. You just put it in the savings account and that's it. It's just, it's not a way of thinking that I, it's a way of thinking that I admire. And the fact that they have a pure type of belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them everything they have. Does that mean that we don't have emunah? Of course not. But that means that our emunah is, that's that much lower. The bitachon is that much lower than it is. That's the idea behind Shemitah, at least according to the Chacham Sofer.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
These days, we could just import.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, 100%. It's a little bit different nowadays with all the problems.
We could probably accomplish what we needed through trade even then.
Right, 100%. So it's just a question of the farmers themselves. Why aren't we going to make any money? What about those guys? You're right, regarding food and regarding starvation, there's going to be absolutely no problem during Shemitah. There's absolutely no problem. But the farmers themselves, they're not going to make any money. What are they going to do during that seventh year? That's when they might say to themselves, listen, I should do something in order for me to be able to gain something from it, in order for me to have something. To that, we even say, forget about it. But you should know that connects with the Rashi.
He can do other business in the seventh year, so that's not much of an issue.
Right, that's true also. Chaf hei lamed ches. Ani Hashem Elokecha Meshotzisi Eschem Meretz Mitzrayim. I Hashem, your God, that brought you out from the land of Mitzrayim. This is right after Ribbis. L'seis lechem et haaretz Kanaan, to give you the land of Canaan. L'yos lechem, I'm sorry, L'yos lechem Elokim, to be for you a God. This is pretty crazy. Pasuk lamed ches in Rashi says over here, L'seis lechem et haaretz Kanaan, L'yos lechem Elokim, Shakol ador be'eretz Yisrael. Anybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael, and he lo lelokim, I am for him a god. Anybody who leaves Eretz Yisrael, ka'ovid avod is a lilim. It's like you're worshipping idols. If you leave Eretz Yisrael, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, then I'm your god. But if you leave Eretz Yisrael, then you might as well be worshipping idols. That's pretty harsh. That's a really, really harsh statement, especially
when
you sit there.
People who can't afford it?
Oh, can't make it there. So now, first of all, we're gonna have to. Well, I'm gonna give you about six different perushim on this pasuk. Six different perushim. But I'm just gonna tell you, when I was in Beis Yisrael, my third year, they came out with this, like, they wanted to make like a newsletter, and they wanted to put it out in the neighborhood like once a week. They wanted to do one of those, you know, like parsha things, whatever it is. So they asked me for something. Yeah, one of those things, you know. So they wanted to. They asked me for a little vort to write down on a piece of paper. So I took out this and I wrote down like everything pretty much that I'm about to tell you. I wrote it all down and I said like everybody's about to be coming back, you know, whatever. And okay. They didn't print it up until Parshas Noach. They put it in Parshas Noach, which made a little bit of sense because in Parshas Lech Lecha there's a very similar Rashi, but it had no shaychus in the middle of Parshas Noach. And people were coming up to me for weeks after saying, well, what's going on over here? What is this talking about? I was ready to kill the editor. But the fact is, this is a very, very strange pasuk to look at. So what's going on? The Orach Chaim says that the point behind Eretz Yisrael is not lisbol mituva. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael not because he wanted to eat from the fruits or because of any other reason other than he wanted to do the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael. And we know that Eretz Yisrael has a tremendous ability to be able to give mitzvot. He wanted to be inside that, to have that ability to be able to do mitzvot at all times. That's what he wanted. The Gur Aryeh says, it's a very nice diak in the Rashi. He says, it's only Hayotze, the person who leaves Eretz Yisrael, called Yotze Mimeneka Ovid Avodah Zolilim. That's when he's considered like you worship the God, by getting up and leaving. But if you're never there in the first place, then that means that you only don't have a God. But it doesn't mean like you're worshiping idols. That's not as bad. Then it's all good. So you're still okay. You're still okay.
Like,
how about that? Yes.
No.
But, however, that's Orach Chaim. That's the Gur Aryeh. They both say that. There's a Shalos V'Tshuvas Rashba in Kuf Lamed Daled that says the pshat behind it is because Tamid Einei El Hashem Elokecha Ba. That always, God's eyes are always on Eretz Yisrael. And he explains through that, the Be'er Basada explains through that, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constant Hashkacha looking at people in Eretz Yisrael. That's why the Be'er Basada says, they say it's Ein Mazel Yisrael. That there's no mazel, there's no constellations. In other words, the stars are not in charge of our fortunes as long as we're in Eretz Yisrael. When we're outside of Eretz Yisrael, that's a different story. But when we're in Eretz Yisrael, that's when Mazel cannot affect us. Mazel cannot affect us whatsoever. That's an unbelievable shot behind why Paro. Now, I somewhat understand this, but this is really a better answer. Ru'u ki ra neged pinechem. Paro told Moshe Rabbeinu when they were about to leave, look, if you look up in that star over there, you'll see the star of Ra, Kochav Ra. In that star, you'll see it's full of blood, and it stands for all B'nai Yisrael, that their blood is going to flow in the desert. So Rashi over there, what does Rashi say? Rashi says, it's not referring to the blood of the Jews being killed. It refers to what? Dam Mila. It refers to Dam Mila, the Dam Korbanos. It refers to the Dam that's being spilled on behalf of B'nai Yisrael. But it's a good thing. It's a bracha. The problem is, they did die. They all died when they left Eretz Yisrael. Every single one of them, all the 600,000 men that left, they did die before they went to Eretz Yisrael. Ru ki ra negi penecham is 100% true. What does that mean? So why in the world did Rashi retranslate it and say, oh, it goes to the Gamila? It could refer to the Jews themselves. They all did die. Only Kalev and Yoshua made it. Nobody else made it. So why in the world do we have to give another vort? Just stick with what we have. Such an unbelievable vort. He says, the reason why is because at that time, Moshe Rabbeinu assumed that they were going to go straight into Eretz Yisrael. They were going to go right inside. The Meraglim weren't going to happen. The spies weren't going to happen. They were going to go straight into Eretz Yisrael. And when you go to Eretz Yisrael, and Mazal Yisrael. So the Mazalos won't affect us whatsoever. So we can retranslate and say that it doesn't refer to the blood of the Jews being spilled. It refers to Damila. So you see there's stars up there, but we can retranslate it and say, nah, that doesn't affect us because really it's talking about Damila. That's because they thought they were going to Eretz Yisrael. But they didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. They stayed out in the desert. That means that the star had to have come true. The star had to happen. So it did have to be Rog Negev Penechav, and they did all have to die because they stayed outside of Eretz Yisrael. Because they stayed outside, everything ended up happening that way. That's a very, very nice answer. But by the way, that's the whole Mazel thing. The Baal Shem Tov says a classic Hasidish answer. The classic Hasidish answer that you want to hear about. So, you know, the answer that you sit there and you're like, that's a Hasidish answer. That's a real Hasidish answer. He says that Eretz Yisrael has nothing to do with the land. It has to do with the state of mind. Oh. Is your mind the state of mind of Eretz Yisrael? Or is your mind the state of Chutz La'aretz? Meaning, what are you thinking in your head? Do you have a mind that's going into Eretz Yisrael and all the Kedusha and all the holiness and everything of Eretz Yisrael? Or is your mind only thinking about the Tumah of Chutz La'aretz? What's your mind into? So Kol Ador Eretz Yisrael, anybody whose mind is into Eretz Yisrael, that guy is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But if you start letting your mind wander, and you let it go to other places, and you allow your mind to start thinking about other things, that's like it's Dor B'chutz La'aretz. If once you take your brain into Chutz La'aretz, that's Ki'ilu, you're over to Avodah Zarah. You might as well be serving Avodah Zarah. That's the idea. You like the Hasidish answer? It's a good Hasidish answer. Yeah, it's a good Hasidish answer. You gotta like that Hasidish answer. The Kli Yakar brings down regarding Ribbis, since we're in here anyway. He says you can't do Ribbis. So he asks, why in the world are you not allowed to take Ribbis? Why is it not allowed? Why is that not a good business? I mean, technically, you can do these things if you're a bank. Why is it not good for between an individual taking interest from another person, lending him $100 and getting $120 back? Why not? Kliyaka says an unbelievable. And also, if it's not mutter, why is it mutter to take from Goyim? Does it just want to mess over the Goyim? What does that mean? So, gives such a great answer. He says the pshat is that when you do ribbis, when you give somebody money, and you're automatically getting $120 back, you're not going to dive into a Kadosh Baruch Hu for your parnasa. It's like automatic parnasa. You think it's automatically coming to you. It's just something that's a given. I gave him $100, I'm automatically going to make $20 off it. I don't have to dive into a Kadosh Baruch Hu to try to get it for myself. It's going to happen automatically because how in the world, what else is going to happen? If he doesn't pay me, his relatives will pay me, or I'll take him to court. I'll somehow get the money, but the money is definitely going to be there. So I don't have to ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu for any help whatsoever. But by Goyim, are you guaranteed to get the money back? You're not. So because you're not guaranteed to get the money back, you have to daven to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the whole pshat behind Ribbis is to daven for your parnasa. That if you have a parnasa, if you have a way of making money, in which you don't have to ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu for anything, you don't need Hashem's help, it's like you say to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know what, I don't need your help this week, forget about it, don't bother, you know, I'm not going to bother asking you for parnasa. So a Kadosh Baruch Hu will say back to you, you don't think you need my help? He'll show you that you need it. I'm telling you, you really need my help. That's like what Ribbis is talking about. But to Goyim, when you're not positive they're going to pay you back, because the possibility that it'll just say to you, oh yeah, take me to a Goyish court. We'll see what ends up happening there. And obviously in America it's all good, but in other places where they're extremely anti-Semitic, there's no way you're going to get your money back.
You can't take them to a Jewish court.
You can see if they'll go. See if they'll end up going. They won't. But you know, you can see if they're going. That's what it says. You just know the Baal HaTorin quotes down over here, Neshech, the word that we use for ribbis over here, which is Neshech, Nun Shin Chaf, is a gematria of 370 altogether. Happens to be the same gematria as Zen Nachash. First, Zen Nachash. It's like a snake. As we say that Zen Nachash is the bite of the snake. That's what ribbis is. Supposed to be the bite of the snake, because the pshat is, there's no Tchias HaMesim for Malave Baribis. Those people lend to other people with interest, there's no Tchias HaMesim for them whatsoever. So too, there's no Tchias HaMesim for the Nachash. That the Nachash will never come back to what it was. The Nachash will never be healed. The Nachash will never be there. Why? It says by the Nachash's curse, Kol Yimei Chayecha, that all the days of the life of the snake, it's going to remain that way, as we learn in the Pesach Seder. Yimei Chayecha Olam Hazeh. Kol Yimei Chayecha Olam Haba. Even Olam Haba, the snake is not going to be able to be fixed. So he's never going to be fixed up. There's a famous story with Rabbi Kiva Eger. Everybody knows the famous story with Rabbi Kiva. Eger and the Noshech, the guy who was Malva Baribis, there's a guy who used to lend with interest to other people. And the Jews hated him. When he died, so his family wanted him to be buried in the Jewish cemetery. But the Chavra Kedisha, like they usually do in these types of situations, they said to the family, absolutely not, we're not going to lend him, we're not going to give him a burial place, we're not going to let him be buried here, unless he pays an exorbitant amount of money. He's got to pay a huge amount of money, like five times the normal price. So that's what the Chavra Kedisha normally does. If a person doesn't deserve to be buried there, if they pay a certain price, they'll make sure, okay, they are buried there, but they'll bury them like on the side. So no, we don't allow him to be there.
Isn't that also Ribbit?
I'm sorry? It's not Ribbit. He didn't lend them anything.
Well, no,
but so what they did was they said that this place will be sold to you for this amount of money. So the guys took him to court. They took him to a Goyish court, and the Goyish court took the city of Posen to court. The city of Posen was represented by Rabbi Kiva Eger, who happened to be the Rebbe at the time, and they brought Rabbi Kiva Eger onto the witnesses stand or the podium, whatever you want to call it. They said to him, how could you charge this guy more than you would charge any other Jew? Why is that allowed? Why would that be allowed according to your religion? Why is that? Why? How can you do that? So he said, we believe that Tchias HaMesim is imminent, that every person will get up, you know, very, very soon, and that the dead will rise, and that everything's going to be all good when our Mashiach comes. Thus, when you buy a plot of land for a person to be buried in, you're not buying it for a long time. You're buying it to rent it out for a short amount of time until there's Tchias HaMesim. That's why the land is so cheap, because if you think about it, land in which you're going to be living there for the rest of your life, that should be the most expensive thing in the world, because you're taking it for the rest of everyone's life. But since you're only getting it for a tiny little amount of time, you're just renting it until Tchias HaMesim happens, it's not that much money. So said Rabbi Kiva Eger, this guy who was Malava Baribis, he lended with Ribis, he lended with interest, he's not going to have Tchias HaMesim. So he's buying the land for permanency. He's going to permanently remain in the ground. So if he's buying the land to be permanent, he's not just renting it out, but he's buying it for permanent time, then he's going to have to pay an exorbitant amount of money. This is the normal amount of money that you have to pay for this amount of land. But somebody who's just renting it out, that's why we sell it to them for so cheap. This is the opposite. This guy's getting the normal price, while we're getting just the rented out price. It's a very cute little, Rabbi Kiva Eger. Good. I don't know exactly what the quote is. They don't have it quoted down like what the judge said back. You'd have to assume that
the verdict,
Rabbi Kiva Eger. If he didn't win, then you think it wouldn't be a Rabbi Kiva Eger story, you know? It wouldn't be in the Rabbi Kiva Eger safer, But no, it doesn't say whether or not he won the case. It doesn't say whether or not. You'd have to assume. All right. Parsha Bechukosai. I read this Meshech Chochma. It's pretty awesome. You know, there's a Maimar Chazal, some brachos in Daf Dalet, that if you say Ashrei three times a day, you're guaranteed a spot in Olam Haba. Say Ashrei three times a day.
Better start,
right? Ashrei by Fesuk Zimra, Ashrei by Yuval Etzion, and then Ashrei by Mincha. If you say three times a day during Mincha and Shabbos, obviously it's a little, that's why I said Ashrei Yuval Etzion, because it depends on who Yuval Etzion is. But you say Ashrei three times a day, you're guaranteed a chelik in Olam Haba. Why? Number two, and seemingly nothing to do with this, Adam called the Kadosh Baruch Hu by the shame of Yudke Vavke, of Havaya, calls him his actual name. Avram started to call him by the name of Adonoi, as Adnos, as the master, my master. What's the difference between Avram Avinu and Adam? Why in the world did one call him Adnos, master, while the other one called him the actual name of God? Seemingly nothing to do with that. And the third one is,
Adam was the singular person in the world. He was as close to,
even afterward he called him Havaya. But yeah, I can hear what you're saying.
What do you mean afterwards?
You mean after the Chet.
You're the first one. Why yours?
So why not ever call him Adonoi? Why not ever call him that name of my master?
He never thought of him as a master.
Why not? Okay, that's the question already. Why didn't Adam Rishon consider him like a master as opposed to Avram, who immediately, the first thing he said was, this is my master. When he was 3 years old, he was able to say, this is my master. And the third question is, if you go in my ways, and you keep my mitzvos, and you do them, I'm going to give your rain in your proper time, the land will give off its produce, and the trees of the field will give off its fruit. Why are we giving natural gifts in this world if you follow God's laws? Why is that the follow-up? It should be, I mean, the way I would have written it if I wrote the Torah, if you follow my laws, you'll get Olam Haba. You'll get a chelik in Olam Haba. But nowhere throughout the Torah does it even mention Olam Haba, to the point where if you look up the Britannica Encyclopedia or Wikipedia or any of these other things to see if the Jews believe in the afterlife, they'll all say to you, no, we don't believe in the afterlife. Because there's not one mention of Olam Haba anywhere throughout all of Tanakh. And when it does mention Gehenim, it mentions that Sheol, which could be a deep pit. It doesn't necessarily have to be Gehenim. There's no such thing as Gehenim, Gimel Hei Nun Mem. In other words, there's Gehinom, the Valley of Hinnom, which is outside of Yerushalayim. But there's no mention of the actual Gehenna as, you know, what we would call hell. In anywhere in Tanakh, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist anywhere. So what in the world? I don't understand. Why not mention it right over here?
Talk about it, right?
The Mefarshim, that's true. That's Torah Shebaal Peh, which they're not masking to. They don't believe. They think Torah Shebaal Peh was only written in the 6th century CE, so therefore it only came in the 6th century CE, so they took all their ideas from Mesopotamia, from the Greeks, and from the Romans. We took all our ideas from them, which obviously isn't true, but it's a wonder. It's still a tremendous wonder. Why in the world are we talking about physical brachas and not talking about what's going to be in Olam Haba? What happened to what's going to be in Olam Haba? Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't make this world to be in Olam Haba. He didn't make this world for miracles. He made the world in order for it to run on its natural course, which on its own could cause a tremendous amount of bracha. There could be a lot of rain, there could be a lot of food, there could be a lot of stuff that's happening within the world. Good things can happen in the world naturally. You could have a natural abundance within the world. There could be totally natural abundance in the world. But the only time HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow that to be is if people will recognize that that nature is all from God. That God is the one who's in charge and He's the one doing it, and it's not just Mother Nature who's doing everything on its own. It's that God is in charge of it. The only time He's going to allow that to happen is if everybody's going to be okay. So, in b'chukosai teilichu, if you go in my ways and you see where I am inside the world and you realize who I am, then everything's going to go smoothly. It's going to be all natural. Everything's going to be good. You're going to get automatic natural brachos because you'll be able to see through the nature that I'm the master of the entire world. That's if everything goes smoothly. But sometimes we forget and we think to ourselves, oh, it's Mother Nature. Oh, that's Darwinism. Oh, that's this. Oh, that's that. And we forget to attribute it back to God. That God caused that to be. That God caused everything to be in that way. Who is Mother Nature? That famous mommy that's out there. Of course, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's in charge of it. But sometimes we forget. And because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought into the world the ability to have nisim, to have miracles happen. For a miracle to happen, to all of a sudden just slap the guy in the back of the head and be like, listen, buddy, it's not just dumb regular things. It's to punch him in the arm and just be like, listen, look at that. You think that's natural? You think that's natural? Of course it's not natural. Just like that's something from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to everything natural is also from God. God can do the crazy things and He can do the normal things just as much. So if we don't realize it, that's when nisim come right down in the world. But you can't have constant nisim, because then you'll forget, you'll think to yourself, you'll treat that as if it's second nature. You'll treat the miracles as if it's second nature. So then miracles are only there once in a while just to put us back into this place, just to realize where everything is inside this world. That's why if you say Hallel HaGadol, which is that part in Pesukim Zimra on Shabbos where you say Hodu Hashem Kito Kilon Chasto, Yomino Hashem Kilon Chasto, etc. And you go through the Og Melech HaBashan, L'Sichol Melech HaMori Kilon Chasto, the Kilon Chasto, Kilon Chasto, the 26 Kilon Chastos that we say in Pesukim Zimra on Shabbos, that whole thing, the Chazal say if you said that every day, you're a kofer. You're a kofer. Why are you a kofer? A kofer is somebody who denies that there's really a God in this world. Because the only thing you're looking at is just miracles. You don't care about the natural things inside this world. You just care about the miracles. Is there a miracle here? Well, if there's a miracle, then I believe God did it. But if it's natural, that's not God. So you can't say Hodu Hashem Ki Tov every day. But if you do Ashrei, Ashrei is entirely natural. Entirely natural. It's all about nature. It's every... You give them their food in their proper time. You open up your hand and you give to them. It's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally opens up his hand and he's like, here you go, guys. That, by the way, is the voice of God. But if you go ahead and you open, it's not that if you open up your hand and all of a sudden everybody comes around and they just take out of his hand. It's not that way. It's a natural way of looking at things. That everything in this world was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's all through nature. If that's so, if you say that 3 times a day and you constantly thank Hashem, you are tremendous for bringing about the nature in this world. That means you're muftach, that you're a ben Olam Haba. Then eventually you're going to go to Olam Haba because you can see God even in this world. You can see God everywhere in this world. That means you're going to automatically go to Olam Haba. And that's why Ashrei is written in the Aleph Beis. It's written in order. It's like Teva, it's like nature. It goes in order of the world. Everything is nature. Everything is natural. And the one thing that we leave out is Nefilah. The fact that we'll fall, because when a Kadosh Baruch Hu is in charge and you're thinking to yourself that everything's good, God will never let you fall. That's why there's no Nun in Ashrei. There's only Someich Hashem L'chol Anoflim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help all those who fall. It's not a nice thing. It's a natural thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu all about. And by the way, that Samach and the Nun, put them both together and you come out with?
Nice.
Son. Oh.
Yes. That's why you're still in high school, buddy. But either way, that's the idea behind the Nace, that the Nace is going to be exactly like that. And that's the idea behind saying Ashrei every single day, that if you do it, everything's going to be good. Adam, when he was created, as you said, Eric, and it's 100% true, he saw all the pe'ulas. He saw all the yisodos, all the workings of God, all the foundations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lent to the world, all the crazy crazy things and everything that Hashem did in order to create the world. Adam Rishon saw them and thus called the Kadosh Baruch Hu by his name Havaya, that you created everything in the world. Creation is Havaya, that you were the person who was Hayahovaviyi, a guy who was able to do everything all at once. That is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He wasn't able to attribute God back to the nature of the world. That was a process that the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver and Noah worked on and worked on and worked on until Avraham Avinu, who was the greatest student that yeshiva Shem Ve'Aver ever had, was able to find God even in the smallest things in the world. He was able to look at a tree and be like, wow, that's God. And everybody would be like, what are you talking about? What, it's just a tree. You put a seed in the ground and it grows. But look how the tree works. Look at how all the things from the roots take in the nutrients from the ground and bring it up the trunk of the tree, and it became like Rabbi Victor Miller, finding all the craziest things within nature in the world. That's what Avraham Avinu became, the greatest student the Yeshiva Shem Ve'Aver ever had, and thus he saw that it's not just nature in the world. There's a master to the whole world, and that's God. That's Adonai. That's why he was able to be the first person to be able to say there is a master out there, not just someone who does the crazy miracles and everything like that. He's the first one to attribute everything straight back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything in this world went straight back to him. That's the idea behind it, and that's why Behi Bar'am. Behi Bar'am, when he created the world, speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, switch around those letters and he come out with Be'Avraham. That only when Avraham was there was creation worth it. Because creation is not for the miracles. Creation is not for the crazy things. Creation is for nature to run its course and for people to still see God even in the nature. For a person not to just say, oh, I can see. But for a person to say to himself, why in the world am I able to see? It's ridiculous how your eye works. Absolutely ridiculous. For a person to do that and to say that, that was the purpose of the entire creation. And Avraham was able to do that. And anybody who does that is a muftach lo shu ben olam haba. To see God in everything in this world is muftach lo shu ben olam haba. Yeah.
Why this small?
No. Because the Hibaram still refers to, because the hay is not supposed to be there, you're saying, because of the Avram?
Yeah.
That's a very good call.
Because why is Avram Avram? Because he recognized Hashem in everything, even the little things. So the hay that was added.
That's very cute. And also the hay is the one letter that was added onto Avram in his name. That's a very, very good call. A very, very good call. That when Avram realized everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did in this world, he added on the hay, which was the little things in this world, that little tiny hay, and he became Avraham, which is Behi Baram. A very, very good call. That's a very good call. Anybody's wrong. That's a very good call. Yeah, that could very well be. That's a very good vort. Okay, and over here also, I got a good little steer over here. I'll give you your rain in its proper time, in their proper time, plural. So Rashi says over here, Be'itam, the Shasha Indar Bnei Avram says, times when people don't go outside, Kigon, Belele Revis. Now that's in a Rashi Yasha. Not all Rashis have that, but it is. Belele Revis, on Wednesday, the night of Wednesday. Smachlok is where that refers to Tuesday night or Wednesday night, but it's Mistama, it refers to the night of Wednesday, which is Tuesday night, as well as Belele Shabbosos, the nights of Shabbos. So nobody goes out on Wednesday nights and Shabbos, or Tuesday nights and Shabbos. Why in the world are we saying those two? It's 100%. The Gemara Taina says that the reason why is because Igeres Bas Machlas, who's a certain queen of demons, is in charge of the night of Tuesday night, and when people go outside during that time, she's able to get them, and she's metame them. The funny thing is, you also say another Be'ito, that you have Gishamim Be'ito. Anybody know where? I'm going to give you the mutter of your land in its proper time. So when you go through and you look over at that v'hayim shema tishmu, which should be at the end of Parshas Eked, I'm wondering if it moved its way out. No, it's right over here. It's still here. It worked out well. That's going to be taratzechem be'ito and pasuk yud dalet and parak yud alef and Eked. It says in tata in be'ito the leil shol yatricho eschem, at nights that's not going to bother you. Be'ito, in its time, it's singular, the Lele Shabbosos, Shakom Yitzim Bebateim, only on the nights of Shabbos, where everybody's found in their house. No Rashi Yoshon to add on the nights of Tuesday. Why not? Why is it just Shabbos night? And why is it written in singular, Be'ito, and over here it's Be'itum? What's the difference between them? So it's a very, very nice Chassam Sofer over here, although I'm not so sure the Chassam Sofer says this. I don't know who I quoted this down from. The Sifzeh Chachamim says, simply put, Shadim are not applicable nowadays. So since Shadim are not applicable nowadays, or especially in times of Rashi, the Shadim had already lost their power. So because of that, Wednesday nights, Tuesday nights are not really ruled over by Igeres Bas Machlas anymore. So therefore we took it out because people go outside on Tuesday nights now, so we don't want the rain on Tuesday nights. They only want it on Shabbos. But it doesn't explain the Sira. Rashi still has Belele Revius over here. But that's what the Sifzeh Chachamim says. So the idea is like this. Another question you can ask is, right afterward it says, V'nasna Aretz Yevulah, the land will give its produce out of the ground. Of course the land's going to, if it's going to rain, of course the land's is going to give its produce. Why would you have thought otherwise? All right, so the idea is like this. Igaris Pas Machlas is Kishuv. What her magic does is apparently it refuses to allow plants to grow in the ground. Anything that the rain does, her Kishuv, her magic, doesn't allow it to happen. Doesn't allow that stuff to go into the ground. It's an unbelievable thing. So Rashi only wrote Shabbos, but that's only at a certain time. At a time of the Asafta de Ganecha. When it says, V'hayim, Shamo Tishmo Mitzosai, you're listening to my mitzos. Asher Nochim is Vaschayim. The early rains and the late rains, and you will gather your grain. What's the problem with that line, Ken? What's the problem with the safta de ganecha? You will gather your grain. What's the problem with the safta de ganecha?
God is supposed to provide.
In Olam Haba, it's supposed to be where other people are doing it for you. If you're not deserving, Rav Shimon Yochai learns out from this pasuk. It might be Vayom Shema Tishmu, you're listening to the mitzvos, but you're not doing it perfectly. And because of that, you got to gather your own grain. Says Rav Shimon Yochai, everybody's brought down by that pasuk. That is a pasuk where you're going to have to do your own work, even though you're doing what HaKadosh Baruch wants, because you're not doing it in the perfect way. At that time, Igaris Bas Machlas is still around on Lil Revias. If she's still around on Lil Revias, you don't want it to rain on Lil Revias, because her kishuv is going to cause the plants not to grow. So you don't want the rain on Lil Revias. So if it's Satya Mitarzachem Bito, because it's Vyasafta Deganecha, you're not doing everything correctly, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not going to give you rain on Tuesday nights. It's not going to do anything anyway. When am I going to give it to you? On Shabbos. Because that's when the power of Igaris Bas Machlas is weakened. Shabbos, the Kedusha of Shabbos is able to knock her down. So I'll only give you rain when? On Shabbos nights. But in this Parsha, in Bechukosai Teilechu, as Mitzosai Tishmorov Asisim Osam, it's talking about what you're doing everything on Melim B'Torah. It's what you're working in Torah to the point where everything is good, and it's the times of Olam Haba. It's the times of pure Olam Haba. At that time, Igaris Bas Machlas is knocked out completely on her own. Every night's going to be a Kadosh night. Even Tuesday night's going to be a Kadosh night. We're going to destroy Igaris Bas Machlas' powers just by learning. And by doing that, Kadosh Baruch Hu will give us the rain on Be'itum. Not only on Friday night, but even on Tuesday night. It'll happen in both times because Igaris Bas Machlas isn't going to be able to be powerful. Alright, and that's why the Nasna Aris Yavula. Then the land will be able to give birth to its stuff. It'll be able to give off its produce. Because you would think to yourself, oh, there's nothing left, it's going to be all nothing. No, it'll still be able to give off its produce. Alright, that's that. I'm going to tell you guys the best vort in the world right now. Chav Zayin Lamed Beis. No, this one you're going to like. I'm going to have to write it down though, just so you guys have it. You know what? Let me write down on this because I'm going to need this piece of paper. B'chol Meiser, the pasuk says, B'chol Meiser Buck of its own. All the tithes of the cattle and the sheep, Kol Asher Yavor Tachas HaShavet, anything that passes under the rod, HaAsir Yeh Kodesh L'Hashem, the tenth one should be Kodesh to God. In other words, you have a bunch of cattle, you're supposed to take 10 cattle, put a rod over the gate, let the cattle go through, the tenth one to go under, you slap it with a red stick, and that animal that has the red stick on its back, that animal is Kodesh to Hashem. That's called Meister Behemoth.
Oh yeah, and it goes to the coin, right?
Goes over to the coin. Bechol Masar, Bakar Vatzon, hold on, Kol Asher Yavor, Takas HaShovet, goes under the rod, Wasiri is Kodesh Lashem. This is a remez to a tremendous idea. We know that the Shvatim sinned tremendously in selling Yosef HaTzadik. They sold Yosef HaTzadik. And when they sold Yosef HaTzadik over to the Midyanim, who sold to the Midyanim, who went to the Ishmaelim, and ended up going down to Mitzrayim, that there was a gezerah put out in Shemayim that later on, because 10 Shvatim were involved, 10 people had to die later on. That's known as the Asara Ruge Malchus. The 10 people were killed by the Romans, not at the same time, but around the same time, the 10 people, the 10 martyrs who were destined to die on behalf of the sin of the Shvatim that they sold Yosef HaTzadik. Now the problem is that there weren't 10 Shvatim. Let's think about it. Binyamin wasn't there. Reuven wasn't there. Reuven ran to either go help his father or to go do tshuva. Yosef is in the pit. That takes away 3 people out of 12. 12 minus 3 is how many? 9. So there weren't 10 Shvatim. There were only 9. So why there are Saru Gimal? Do you know what's around either? The 10th one is known as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. there. Now, when you have the 10 Arugim Malchus, the 10 Arugim Malchus, who's going to represent? Somebody can represent Shimon. Somebody can represent Levi. Somebody can represent Yehuda. And he can keep going all the way through. Who's going to represent God? Who's going to represent God? So the Gemara, it's an unbelievable Gemara, but they say that it was Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva's the one, there's a Gemara, Baba Kama, Nun Aleph of an Aleph, that Rabbi Nechemiah Amsuni or Rabbi Shimon Amsuni. Did I say Nun Aleph? It's Mem Aleph of an Aleph, I'm sorry. Nechemiah Amsuni or Shimon Amsuni used to darshan out the Essen in the Torah. Every word S. That word S, Aleph Tav. What's it there for? It's come to include something. So Shimon Amsuni and Nechemiah Amsuni come to include, they included everything you could think of from every S in the Torah. Then they came out to a pasuk, S Hashem Elokecha Tira, Hashem your God you should fear. They said, oh, that's it. It can't be. You can never fear anyone as much as you fear God. They said, forget it, we're out. We can't do it anymore. So they separated themselves and they said, we're not going to darshan this out anymore. We're not going to darshan out the Essen. We're not going to do anything more. Said the Talmid and Rebbe, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with all the Essen you darshan up until now? They said the famous line, Kishem Shekibalti Schar Ladrisha, just like I got Schar, just like I got rewarded for darshaning them, for saying out these words, Kakibalti Schar Laprisha. I'm also going to get Schar for staying away from darshaning Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. Until Rabbi Akiva came along and said, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, you know what the S includes? Talmid Chachamim. The Talmid Chachamim, you have to fear like you fear God. Fear Talmid Chachamim like you fear God. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim, Rabbi Akiva, you're going to equate the fear of Talmid Chachamim to the fear of God? I swear, you're going to take my place in the Asar Ugi Malchus. You think that you're equal to me? Okay, you'll be my place in the Asar Ugi Malchus, and he had to die that way. That's why he had to die. This whole pasuk represents that. Here we go. This is what we call a notrikon. Notrikon is an abbreviated form. The Chol Maaser stands for the Yadu Kulam Lama Mace Akiva Shehaya Roe Bakar Batzon. Everybody knows, why did Akiva die? Who was a shepherd of Bakar Batzon? Who was a shepherd of cattle and sheep? He was a famous shepherd of cattle and sheep before he became a Talmud Chacham. Why did he die? Because Kol Asher Yavor, anybody who passed away, that was Takas HaShevet. It was for one of the 10 Shvatim, one of the 9 Shvatim that was there. But there were only 9 of them. What about Rabbi Akiva? Why did Rabbi Akiva have to die? Oh, Asiri, the 10th one, Rabbi Akiva, was Kodesh Lashem. He was holy only for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He represented HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He took the place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Asar Rugi Malchus. So that's V'chol Yad Yukul Olam HaMes HaKiva Shaya Roe Bakar Ritzon, because Kol Asher Yavar Takas HaShevet. But Asiri, the 10th one, yeah, Kodesh Lashem. What? That's why the Dafka. No, it doesn't have anything to do with the actual pshat behind the pasuk itself, although I'm sure there is some type of pshat behind it. It doesn't necessarily have to do that, but it's all regarding this. But I'm going to add on a little bit.
Who says this?
Yeah. It's all from a Rebbe, the Nitzutzei Shimshon, my favorite sfarim in the world. Rebbe Shimshon Mal Stripolia. Nitzutzei Shimshon goes on and says, there's a Gemara Munachos, the Chav Tesim Abeis, that says, Rebbe Akiva was shown to Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu was shown every Talmud Chacham of every generation. And he was shown Rebbe Akiva. And Rebbe Akiva was giving a shir, and Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to sit in on the shir. So after the shir was over, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, what do you think of Rebbe Akiva? Moshe Rabbeinu said, I didn't understand a word he said. I have no idea what he said. His Torah was so high, it was so lofty, I had no idea what he was saying. I couldn't understand what he was saying. So Rebbe Akiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, yeah, truly Rebbe Akiva is a tremendous person. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Moshe Rabbeinu asked him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's his death going to be like? I want to see what he dies. What's going to be the end of his life? Like, where does he end up going? Like, he's expecting he's going to go to Gan Eden alive, he's going to get some good whatever, good reward. All of a sudden he sees the end of his life, his flesh is being combed from the Romans. He sees his flesh being combed off by the Romans. Such tremendous pain and such tremendous things. And he yells at HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Zu Torah v'zu Schara. Well, this is a Torah and this is the reward you get for learning such Torah. This guy was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. How in the world is this the reward for such a Talmud Chacham? And what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say back to him? Shtok, shut up. Kachala b'machshava. This is what happened in thought. This is what I need to happen. I guess he can't answer to that. Ritzutzei Shimshon says, you have to understand, Rabbi Akiva was a Ben Gerim. He was a son of Gerim. In order to get to the level that he was at in the Torah, in order to get to the level Rabbi Akiva was on, you have to do tremendous things. You have to raise yourself up to a tremendous level. You have to bring yourself up to a very, very high level. Only when you bring yourself to that high of a level can you get that amount of Torah. To do that, you need chosavos. You need the merit of our fathers. You need Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to be your fathers. But did Rabbi Akiva have, did he have Zchus Avos? No! He was a Ben Gerim. He was the son of Gerim. So he wasn't allowed to have Zchus Avos. He didn't have Zchus Avos. So how in the world was he able to get that high in Torah? Unbelievable answer. Before he was born into the world, the Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, you cannot get that high, you won't be able to get there. Rabbi Akiva accepted upon himself tremendous Yisurim, tremendous tribulations, trials, crazy things to happen to him during his lifetime, in order to gain the ability to get that amount of Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu said to him, the only way you're going to be able to get it, according to Midas HaDin within the world, is for you to take upon yourself tremendous pain, and then you'll be able to get that amount of Torah in the world. That's the only way you'll be able to get it without Zchus Avos. Are you willing to take those trials and tribulations, those problems upon yourself? Rabbi Akiva said, 100%, I want to get all that Torah, I'm willing to do anything. Nobody in this room asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu to do that. Nobody in this whole world ever asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu to do that. Only Rabbi Akiva asked for himself to do that. Rabbi Akiva got it at the very, very end of his life. That's what part of the trials and tribulations was, not to be frum for 40 years, or not to be a Talmud Chacham for the first 40 years of his life. For him to lose out in his first 40 years. That was part of the trials and tribulations. So it went on all the way through. That's exactly what a Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu understood it. Shtok. Quiet, Moshe Rabbeinu. Kachal of the Machshava. This is what went down in the thought of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva wanted this. Rabbi Akiva knew this is the way it has to be. He knew it had to be this way. So why did he have to be a Baal Tshuva? Why do you have to be that way? Such a tremendous answer. The Ben Ish Chai says an unbelievable thing. Sometimes BTs know how to do it better than FFBs. The Baal Tshuvas can always get something a little bit more than FFBs. Because an FFB, guy's from birth, who's been sitting there, he's been from his entire life, has no idea what it's like to stay up all night learning Torah. But a guy who's a Baal Tshuva stayed up all night pulling all-nighters for college. Or he was watching the David Letterman show, and then he watched another thing, and then he watched this, and then he watched that, and we're watching TV all night. There's always those movie thons in which you just stayed up all night. A guy who stayed up all night for that, as soon as he becomes from, what does he think to himself? Well, if I did it for Tuma, if I did it to do those things, for sure I could do it for Torah. A guy who sits there on Shavuos and will say to himself, of course I could do Shavuos any Thursday night. I could do Shavuos any night. It'll be very, very easy for me to do. That's that. That's number one. But number two, a guy who's played baseball before, a guy who has divin for a fly ball in the middle of the outfield, knows what it's like to throw everything that he has into the game. To throw everything he has into the basketball game. Everything he has, not just to sit there and just be like, okay, I'm playing ball, but to really get into the game, to push people over, to knock people down. It's the same way in learning. If you're willing to get into the game, if you're willing to get in there, Baal Tshuva knows how to get into it. He knows how he got into it in baseball and football. He can get into it when it comes to learning, but nobody else knows how to do it. If he was willing to sit in a freezing cold Bears game with three pairs of sweatpants on, 14 sweatshirts, in the middle of December, and watch the Bears play when they're down by 35, and still stay at the game, and sit there with like icicles hanging from your nose. You're willing to do that. You're willing to do that. You know what it's like to sacrifice for Torah. You'll know to sit inside a base measure. Then when it's freezing cold in a base measure, you don't say like, oh, I can't learn here. I gotta have a coat. You won't do that. Because if you sat there for a Bears game, you'll be able to do it for anything like this. If you were sitting at a sports game and you screamed out loud, you cheered when something happened, when something crazy happened, when there was a home run in the bottom of the ninth with two outs and bases loaded down by three, then you know what it means to scream when you heard a grape shot. You know what it means to start screaming out loud and say like, oh, that's a good shot. Oh, that's tremendous. Then you know what it feels like. Because otherwise, the guy will say like, if you have just a guy who's never seen that before, just look at the guy like, shh, no. If you don't have that, that's the reason why. Sometimes it's better to have had that opportunity. And Rabbi Akiva knew when he was over. But during those 40 years of his life, where he was an Amma Aretz, as he calls himself, the 40 years of his life where he was a Roe Buck of Ratzon, where he was a shepherd of cattle and sheep and didn't learn anything, and he hated Talmidei Chachamim. Gemara Pesachim and Mem Tesem and Beis says that he was willing to go up to Talmidei Chachamim and he would have bitten them like donkeys if he would see them in the street. He'd bite them like donkeys. His Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, no, stay like a dog. He's like, no, donkeys break bones. He was willing to go up and say that. That type of a person knows what it's like to go and do everything else that they need to do for Torah, but somebody else might not. Rikiva had to live that type of a life. He had to be that way. It's a tremendous thing. Moshe Rabbeinu also, very similar. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai also. He said this about tons of people, that the only way they became who they were was because they saw what they were able to do beforehand. Nelson Tzvi Finkel. Well, I'm with that. But that's the idea behind Rabbi Akiva, that he got that high. We'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.